good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to The Futurist Female. This is the show where we find the extraordinary in every woman. I'm delighted to introduce my guest today, Irene Kwan. She is the CEO of TMC Fertility and Women's Specialist Center. Irene, welcome to the show. It's good of you to join me. I'm so curious to know about your job. You lead a fertility center, a women's specialist center, where you work with so many couples through a journey of infertility. Maybe we can begin our conversation by you telling me a little bit about your work and how you came to be in the field of reproductive health and why you feel so passionately about it.
Thank you, Melissa.
Okay.
Well, I'm actually a trained pharmacist by profession. Mm-hmm. I graduated from Liverpool John Moores University. And then upon returning, I was actually serving in a hospital pharmacy for almost 13 years before venturing out. Now, before coming to a fertility field, I was actually in aesthetic. I also was in the IT healthcare industry as well. And finally, when the opportunity arise, you know, I was given the opportunity to join TMC Fertility, I jumped at it straight away.
Okay.
Now, being a mother of two, you know, I understand that, you know, the journey is actually not easy. Even though I myself did not really had to go through IVF journey itself, right? But it was definitely not easy for me to conceive as well. Mm. Yeah.
So you have some personal experience about how it feels to struggle to get pregnant. Can we talk a little bit about what kind of fertility rates, or how common is infertility in Malaysia?
Oh, it is pretty common now. Okay. At least one in six couples, right?
One in six?
Yeah.
One in six.
Actually, okay. And even worldwide as well.
Okay.
It's not just a national problem in Malaysia. We are beginning to see the rise of infertility issues worldwide, globally.
Why is that? Do we understand the determinants of one's fertility or infertility?
Well, definitely because of the changing demographics as well and the lifestyle.
Okay.
That has got a lot to do and affects the fertility rates. And also maybe because of the education level now, where even more and more women are given opportunities to come out to the working world. So we have choices.
Okay. Yeah. So is the biological clock a real thing?
Unfortunately, it is.
Okay, okay. Yeah. So when you say, you know, your biological clock is ticking, it is a real thing, medically speaking.
Yes, okay. correct.
Okay. Tell me more about that, because again, you know, women often think they have to choose one or the other, right? Which do I prioritize? Do I want to prioritize my career? Do I want to prioritize focusing on not missing this window of opportunity I have for fertility? How do you talk or think through some of these concepts?
Maybe I can start with defining what is actually infertility.
Oh, yes, please. Yeah.
Yeah. So if a couple have already tried or unprotected intercourse for minimum 12 months.
Okay.
And did not get pregnant, then they should actually consult the fertility specialist. Mm. But of course, this applied to couples who are younger. But if women 35 and above, but if they already tried at least 6 months of unprotected intercourse, then they should actually seek fertility screening already.
Okay. So based on your experience, Irene, at what point do couples tend to go for a fertility screening or get that diagnosis of infertility? Do couples go quickly, I mean, immediately after this 12 months or 6 months, depending on the age, or do they often wait for a long time? And, you know, if you're waiting for a long time, again, the biological clock is always against you, right?
Yeah, correct. Unfortunately, probably it's also because of lack of education in this field as well. Most of the time, the couples will have tried a couple of years or many, many years, some even more than 10 years before they mm-hmm. come to us to seek actually help.
Okay.
So we would also like to raise the education level or awareness among the public. One of the keys is to check as early as possible.
Check for
fertility screening.
Okay.
No, don't have to wait until they are ready to start parenthood.
Right.
They should start early.
Okay.
And actually for career-minded women, you know, we still have a choice. That's when fertility preservation comes in the picture. So okay. This is one of the options.
I'm very curious to learn more about fertility preservation, but let me come back to the screening, fertility screening. So essentially what you're saying is that regardless of, if you're ready or not to become a parent, mm-hmm. you should at least know your fertility status. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay, correct. Okay. I think that's a level of literacy or health literacy that maybe we're not quite familiar with. It's always, we'll address the problem when something's wrong. So it's less preventative.
Correct. I'm so glad you brought up that point, a lot of people, they are not aware of that part. It could be because of the stigma that is associated with infertility. Mm. They do not want to find out because they are not ready to start parenthood yet. Mm. And that's why they delay even the screening. But we shouldn't.
Mm. Well, sometimes infertility is always framed as a woman's issue, right? It's always seen from the perspective, I can't get pregnant, and therefore it is some moral failing on the part of the woman. And I say this, of course, with a lot of respect and I think feeling when I say that. How is infertility different between a man and a woman? I mean, are the issues, the reproductive issues of fertility, how does it differ?
Yes, it's true. It's usually when it comes to infertility, women are usually perceived to be the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not entirely true because, as we see more and more cases, right, the infertility issues actually are quite equal among men and women.
Oh, it's quite equal?
Correct. So if we can detect it earlier, then we can actually address the issue earlier as well.
Okay. With women, if I may ask you to explain a little bit, what are some of the more common issues of fertility? And with men, what are the issues?
Well, for women, if they have intrauterine fibroids or endometriosis mm-hmm. or any thyroid diseases as well, that will actually affect
fertility.
So lifestyle, like weight problems,
smoking, excessive drinking,
correct.
The kind of common sense issues we know that affect overall health, that also affects fertility.
Yes.
And what about men? It has to do with the motility of the sperm, right?
Correct. Usually men with fertility issues, they have low sperm count.
Okay.
Yeah. Or very low testosterone level as well.
So when we talk about fertility treatments, it is how we can rectify or remedy those issues.
Correct.
Talk to me a little bit about assisted reproductive technologies, ART. Am I getting that correct? Maybe you can explain more. You're the medical expert here.
Well, ART procedures has been around actually since 1978. Or much early, in fact, they have not publicized it.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So in ART procedures, they actually use to address infertility. Well, common procedures include IUI, intrauterine insemination, or in vitro fertilization,
okay,
which is commonly used as IVF.
We're more aware of IVF, okay?
Correct. And also intracystoplasmic sperm injection is mm-hmm. also part of it. And of course, cryopreservation as well, which is the freezing of sperm, egg and embryo.
Okay, and that would normally happen for someone who is, say, very ill or going through cancer treatment and they want to preserve their fertility, right?
Correct, that's one of the options.
Can we segue into the discussion of fertility preservation? So we're talking about infertility treatments mm-hmm. And, when you discover that after a year you can't get pregnant, mm-hmm. you may seek a diagnosis of infertility. But what about fertility preservation? How does that, what does that encompass? And in your experience, are women and men coming to you to seek fertility preservation?
Well, we are hoping to raise that awareness, but sadly, right, in Malaysia, the awareness is still quite low.
Mm-hmm.
It also possibly due to the stigma as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is cost a barrier?
Well, financial constraint is one of it, because usually cryopreservation, right, or freezing itself will be applicable to the younger crowd. We want to encourage them to come as young as possible.
Oh.
Yeah, like young adults. So financial constraint is definitely one of it. But it's also because of the stigma too.
The stigma? What do you mean about stigma? Can you elaborate?
Well, if they are not ready to start parenthood, it's not something that they want to talk about, think about, or consider as well. But that's when it should not be.
Mm.
They should start considering this while they are younger.
Mm. So, I once heard a comment that, you know, many years ago that stayed with me through all the years, and it talked about maybe we should even consider freezing the eggs of our mature but young teenage daughters, so that gives them the opportunity to do whatever they want in life, but have that as kind of an insurance policy to start a family whenever they want to. And same for, I'm sure, our sons as well. What do you make of that in terms of how fertility preservation might change, you know, the way we live or the way society behaves? Is that something that parents or young adults should think about as they embark on the journey, even though they're not ready to become parents just yet, but have this as an insurance policy, or, you know, allow for? I think Facebook allows for their staff to freeze their eggs, right?
Yes.
So to have that burden off their mind, to know that the biological clock may not be ticking for them as quickly as the rest of us.
Well, for teenagers, definitely it's a bit
too young.
So usually we will recommend it for young working adults, you know. That's why I think Facebook and even Google include that as part of their medical benefits for their employees as well. Now, this definitely helps in terms of financial as well.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, it is definitely a good option to consider.
Okay. Yeah. I want to come back to the issue of stigma, but we're going to take a quick break here on The Futures Female. We'll come back and continue our conversation with Irene Kwan, the CEO of TMC Fertility, in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hi, welcome back to The Futures Female. I'm Melissa Idris, and I'm chatting today to Irene Kwan. She is the CEO of TMC Fertility and Women's Specialist Centre. Just before the break, we were talking about awareness about infertility and maybe the lack or the hesitance to seek fertility treatments until, you know, sometimes late in the game. One of the reasons you pointed to is the stigma, right? And there seems to be a lot of shame and silence around issues of infertility. And I can imagine that, you know, for a lot of people, it's not an easy admission to come to when you have to admit there's a problem, and then you have to go and seek, you have to act on that and seek help. What is it that we can do to help break that kind of cycle of silence around infertility?
Well, first we can actually normalize the conversation first, you know, and then, you know, talk a bit more and educating the public more about infertility, because infertility is really not the end of the world. There is actually a solution or treatments towards it. And in fact, it is definitely an emotional journey.
Mm.
That's why, you know, at TMC Fertility, we do provide, you know, even psychological and emotional support to our patients, you know, as they actually start and carry on the journey with us. And this part is very important.
Mm. Well, why is it important? Because, again, you know, sometimes not a lot of people seek psychological support, psychological help. Not a lot of people go to therapy, but during this period, because it's so kind of stressful to the mind and also to the body, particularly for the woman, you need that counseling, you need that psychological support, right? Tell me a little bit about why that's so important, and how do women who are going through that perhaps reach out or seek that support?
You know, perhaps one of it is to, you know, join a support group in terms of that they can discuss with the peers, you know, having the same issues. You know, there's also one way to normalize the issue as well. And then they know that they are not alone in this journey.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for us, we want to make known, or that, you know, all these supports are in place. So we have like team of clinical psychologists. Right. We also have fertility coaches.
Because one in six couples, yeah. right? I mean, it's much more common than we realize. And I'm sure that, if not you yourself, you know of other couples who are struggling through a fertility journey. So perhaps talking about it more, as you say, if you've gone through it, to kind of tell other people. The stigma comes also, I think, from family and friends, not wanting to tell family and friends, and society blaming, lifestyle choices or life choices of the woman. How is TMC, and you personally, are you embarking on more awareness for the public, normalizing this topic?
Yes, we do. And we provide a lot of platforms, even like previously during MCO, we were actually conducting a lot of webinars to actually share about it. So we try to educate the general public that, get to know your fertility health as early as possible. And then from there, you can make decisions. And of course, we share a lot of educational pointers as well about fertility, about infertility. And then the more we actually share, we can actually gradually normalize it as well.
Mm. What do you think are the ways in which not just society can support, mm-hmm. but the system, the government, in terms of policy? Is there sufficient support for people who go through infertility? I mean, you think about the kind of medical care that is given to those who are ill, but again, infertility can impact people and, the strongest desire to have children. Do you feel there's enough kind of policy support for this segment of population who struggle with infertility?
Yes, our government actually has taken initiative as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so fertility treatments now, we can actually withdraw from EPF schemes. Oh. So they have announced it actually during the Budget 2020 announcement.
Oh, so that's quite recent.
Yes.
Okay, so you can withdraw some money to help you with your fertility journey.
Correct.
Okay, all right. Well, that's. Is there anything more that probably needs to be done? I know policy support is a good indicator from the top for people to be more comfortable with, or to encourage people to seek fertility help.
Yeah, that's a good start, actually. Mm. So in countries like China, where they're already incorporating in their insurance schemes as well.
Wow.
Yes.
China?
Yes.
Fertility treatments.
Correct.
Okay, so they want to encourage more than one child, clearly. Okay.
It's being covered.
Right. Yeah. In the few minutes that we have left, I want to ask you about some of the issues that the media can help with. People in the medical fraternity can help with, public watching who may not be aware of their fertility health. What would you like the audience to understand about infertility and seeking fertility treatments?
Well, I will definitely encourage the general public to take actions as early as possible. Don't delay it. No, even if they are not ready, or we're not ready to start parenthood journey yet, it's good to actually screen for fertility health first.
Does it often have to be both the couple attending fertility treatments or seeking fertility treatments, or can one or the other screen their fertility health?
Well, if it's screening purposes, right, it doesn't matter. Individuals can actually come. But of course, if they are embarking on a fertility treatment journey, then definitely we encourage the couple to come forward together.
Okay. I'm also curious, Malaysia is one of the kind of destinations for fertility treatments, if I'm not mistaken, is that right? So other people come to our country to seek fertility treatments.
Yes, correct. We're actually known as the fertility hub of this region.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay. So we're helping make, ART babies.
Correct. Because okay. of our affordable treatments here with high standards and also very high success rate.
High success rates. So give me an example, Irene, if you don't mind. How successful, when you think about success rates, how do you measure that, and what are success rates?
Successful pregnancy rates.
Okay. How,
yeah.
how often does an ART lead to a successful pregnancy?
Now, when ART was actually started in 1978, despite numerous attempts and to improve, the success rates was hovering at about 12% only.
Oh, that's quite low.
Yeah, so the patient will have to repeat a few cycles in order to get a successful pregnancy. But nowadays, that's not it. So at TMC Fertility, we are achieving at 65%.
Wow.
Which is comparable to actually worldwide standards.
What does that feel like to hold a baby that you've helped the parents to along the fertility journey? Has there been many babies that have come your way?
Yes, definitely. And it's very, very memorable because we are part of the journey to actually assist them in making their dreams come true.
I'm sure that it must be very fulfilling. I want to thank you so much, Irene, for joining me on the show today, sharing a little bit about your work, but also normalizing this conversation about infertility and, you know, taking away some of the shame and the stigma around it, that it's okay to talk about and okay to seek screening and to seek help. That's all we have for you on this episode of The Future is Female. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.